The Nerdcast Empire is on the air. It is Friday, March the 21st, 2025, and this is your weekend edition of the Nerdcast News Report. I am Matt in the studio. Great to have you along with us. We've got some exciting news today on this Friday, as we've kind of been waiting for some big announcements with SakaiCon, and we got a big one yesterday, so we will talk a little bit about that in today's edition. We're also going to talk a little bit about another professional wrestler getting into the world of anime voice acting. And we'll talk a little bit about a beloved gaming magazine that could be making a comeback. We'll see kind of how the news on that shakes out as we go forward. But certainly some interesting news. And of course, we'll wrap everything up at the end with the Empire Express. Joining me in the studio on this Friday morning is Mike. Mike, how's it going?
It's going. It's Friday. It's officially spring as of yesterday, so we're good there, despite it being 28 degrees here. NCAA tournament's off and running, and that's always a great time of the year, and we got some good news on the convention front, so excited to get going.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's really some interesting news this morning. And I think, you know, we've been kind of waiting, as I said, in the open for kind of that one thing beyond just generally supporting SakaiCon and kind of what they're trying to do in light of everything that's happened. We've been kind of waiting for that one piece of news that maybe took the con from kind of the feel good story where you're just kind of rooting for these guys to succeed, into the, oh, okay, now it's actually an event that you really need to go to. And that news, at least part of it, is a start of it. What one of the first pieces of news that kind of makes you feel that way broke yesterday. The news that Kick Punch Quap, one of the popular fan panelists that ran OhioCon many times, of course, had the beloved OhioCon game show, among other panels like the Metagame. They were announced as featured panelists for SakaiCon yesterday. And, you know, honestly, this is one of those things that immediately gets your attention. We've talked about many times on this podcast that even when OhioCon was struggling and it wasn't something that was terribly enjoyable to go to because we just felt like maybe the industry guests just didn't really align. There were a lot of repeat guests or whatever it may be that caused us to just kind of not really be super excited about OhioCon. It was guys like this, these guys here and the Anime Hell guys, and they were the ones that basically kept us coming every year, specifically for the game show, which to me, you know, I've been to, you know, we've been to Otakon. I've been to Anime Expo. We've sat in on dozens of different varieties of game shows. This was the best one,
yeah,
really anywhere. It clearly had the most work put into it. It was definitely run by guys who loved what they were doing. And, you know, the qualification quiz honestly took it even to another level, which we took the last year they ran it at OhioCon. And it's just, you have guys that when you look at what makes an anime convention great is not just your industry guests, not just, you know, these people that are, you know, they kind of do the con circuit. It's your fan panelists that love doing this kind of stuff and entertaining people and having a good time. And to me, these guys are as good of a fan panel group as I've seen at any other convention. So this to me was kind of that moment where you just think, I kind of wish I hadn't scheduled some things that weekend. I'm still going to get to SakaiCon. I probably would have planned on going all weekend had I known this was going to happen. But your reaction, I'm sure, kind of mirrors mine. Thoughts on Kick Punch Quap headed to SakaiCon?
Yeah, obviously really excited about this. I agree with you. I think my opinion has changed over the years. When we first started attending anime conventions, there was a certain cool novelty about the industry guests and the voice actor guests. But I don't know how other fans are, but for me, it's like your enjoyment of voice actors is kind of rooted to like a certain specific time and who was in the shows you were watching at that point in time. Kind of those like classic, like early 2000s actors that I really enjoyed and wouldn't mind seeing to this day. But I just I'm not super invested in a lot of the current new talent. So when I see them on the convention schedule, it doesn't really do a whole lot for me. Also, if they're coming to, you know, OhioCon or SakaiCon or MatsuriCon, they're also probably going to Anime Midwest or Animazement or Anime Crossroads, or there's nothing about their appearance at one specific con that makes it feel unique to that convention.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the big differences between industry and voice actor talent and fan panels and panelist groups that do multiple panels, is that they kind of give your convention an identity. It's like when I think Kick Punch Quap up until 2024, I thought OhioCon because that's where I always saw them. I think Anime Hell, while it ran at multiple conventions, to me, it always felt like OhioCon was where I saw it.
Yeah.
And I think that's, once you lose that, your convention kind of loses a sense of this is what differentiates us from everything else, because man, there are so many anime conventions and so many places to spend your money. Here's why you should come here. And, you know, I'm looking at SakaiCon for 2025. Obviously, it's a little bit of a rushed effort given the legal situation going on and just the fact that this is the maiden voyage. The overall guest roster may not be something that gets a lot of people excited, but I think if you can start securing groups like Kick Punch Quap and potentially the Anime Hell guy, you get them coming year in and year out. That's something you can actually build a convention around. And, you know, I'm not expecting SakaiCon to pull in 10,000 people in year one. They may not have 10,000 people by year five, but this is definitely something that you can build from moving forward, and who knows where they end up.
And I think as long as from a financial standpoint, they don't need 10,000 people to be able to continue to function as a convention, you don't really ever have to shoot for that as a goal. Like, as long as you're running a high quality convention, I think you'll get the amount of people you need to get for that. And you mentioned Anime Hell, Rich Lather, of course, not his real name, but his pseudonym, but it should be, it's a great name. He's the one that kind of runs what was the OhioCon version of that, and hopefully will be the SakaiCon version of that. I know, you know, him along with guys like Saker and other Kick Punch Quap guys were kind of active in the Discord for SakaiCon. So you kind of hope that we were leading to this, but, you know, you just weren't sure like what their schedule was, because when they stopped doing the game show, they kind of made it sound like it was just really, just not from a time standpoint, something that they really could put in the effort. And clearly they wanted it to be great. And if it couldn't be great, they didn't want to do it, which I always appreciate that to some point. And again, you know, if you're planning a trip to SakaiCon, maybe you don't know these guys, like their humor, I guess, is just kind of right in line with what my humor is, which really works. But also, you know, I mentioned the qualification quiz, and if you've never tested your anime knowledge, you definitely should go take the qualification quiz, even if you don't think you're going to do well on it, because
you probably won't.
You probably won't. First off, if you're pretty sure you won't, you probably won't. But that's not the point. One, it's kind of cool to see like what those questions are that kind of set you aside to be in the game show. And two, they encourage you to create the most funny answers to these questions. Yeah. That they will then read when they do the actual game show itself. But, you know, we talked a little bit about off the air yesterday, kind of when they stopped doing the OhioCon thing. And obviously, it's pretty clear that they were at least on board with the Sakai Guild, SakaiCon people pretty early in the process when there were boycotts and stuff talked about with OhioCon. But the other thing, too, is, and this has been an issue for Anime Hell over the years as well, it kind of got better at the end, finally.
Yeah.
But these were panels that were run in rooms that were insufficiently large for the fan. Because, I mean, the OhioCon game show would pack out any room that they put it
in. Absolutely.
And there were times, if you didn't get lined up, that was one of the things, you know, I'm not a big LineCon fan. But that was one that I'd be aligning, like the moment the line develops, I want to be near that line. And if I have to stand in line for an hour to go see the game show, I'm going to do that because I don't want to miss that event. You know, OhioCon could have run that in their big ballroom every year and didn't. And they would always have something else in there that just probably didn't draw a fraction of the interest. And I have to assume that that also played a factor in this, that these guys, for all the hard work they did, for the popularity, for the people like us who paid OhioCon $50, $60, $70, $80 every year to go see these guys and the Anime Hell guys, had to feel like they were kind of getting ripped off a little bit because they were always being stuck in smaller rooms and really not pushed as one of the main attractions of the convention.
Yeah. And looking back at it now in hindsight, you have the feeling that there were times where OhioCon was just like, yeah, we understand this event's popular, but it shouldn't be. You should instead go to these events. These are the ones you're supposed to go to, not these. Almost like they were trying to throttle it in some way to keep it from really being the marquee event that it should be. And OhioCon Game Show, Anime Hell were two things that to me were the reasons I would go to OhioCon. Is I don't know how typical I am of an anime fan going to these conventions, but these were the events that entertained me. And, you know, I hated the thought that there might be an instance where I couldn't get a seat in one of those because for whatever reason, we decided not to book a larger room.
Yeah, it really didn't make any sense. And, you know, I think when you look at, you know, some of their other panels, we talked a little bit about the metagame. And for those who don't understand, like, you know, what the metagame is, you know, they would basically try to determine like what the greatest video game of all time was. And
well, they would have various questions. And basically there was like a card game. You had game titles on the cards and the question would come up and you would then have to formulate an argument using one of your cards, you know, so you'd end up in weird situations where you'd have to explain how, you know, Resident Evil is the most chill game of all time or something nutty like that. And it was really interesting just because of the randomness of it and how you'd end up having to defend some mediocre game as if it's the greatest thing in the world. There was that. There was their tier list where they would do.
Yeah, that was the one I was thinking of. The
crowd participation where you go up and nominate a game for the best game of all time. And you could also pick to remove a game. And, you know, you'd end up with Cory in the House being one of the greatest games ever. Really, really enjoyable entertainment. And kind of going back to their stance and the whole rift between OhioCon and the Volunteers, they came out pretty quickly and just said, hey, we're not doing OhioCon 2024. You know, we're part of the boycott. And I think a lot of that has to do with they probably had built relationships with some of those department heads and some of the volunteers that maybe they didn't have that same camaraderie with Melissa and them. And honestly, the messaging coming out of the boycott was done so much better from the Sakai side than the OhioCon side. I think even if you were neutral, it was tough to not come out on the side of the volunteers.
Yeah, and again, that's something obviously we've talked about at length, but just OhioCon has just never done itself any favors through this whole process. Because again, we're not going to sit here and say that everything OhioCon did was wrong or they were completely in the wrong. But they were a lot in the wrong. At least that's what the impression was to somebody who had no, you know, I wasn't looking to root for anybody in this battle. No. I was just saying
both sides probably could have handled things better if we're being honest.
Sure. And, you know, I just feel like the smartest thing SakaiCon and Sakai Guild ever did was basically immediately just say, we're not going to talk about this anymore. And we're just going to move forward and do our own convention. And had OhioCon just kind of taken that stance too, you know, maybe it's a different situation. Maybe we're not in court. Maybe there's not these ill feelings between the two sides to the same degree. But, you know, again, that's kind of water under the bridge at this point. What happens. So that's, you know, we're going to move forward, obviously, with SakaiCon. And this, to me, is a really exciting announcement. And these guys, if you're on the fence about going, you should go just for these guys. If you don't go for any other reason, it's absolutely worth the trip to Columbus to see their panels. And honestly, if this is something that's going to become a regular feature of this convention, it's going to be something that's going to make this convention a must attend every year. That's kind of the level they're on. So exciting news there. Some other news we want to talk about as we kind of move forward past the SakaiCon news and just some interesting news that we were going to get more wrestlers as voice actors. The announcement that the website for Kinnikuman Perfect Origin Arc has announced that Shinsuke Nakamura, the former New Japan Pro Wrestling wrestler, now longtime WWE wrestler, will be voicing Commandus, a colleague of Warsman, or Warsman, I'm not sure how that's pronounced. I've not watched that show, but this is his first voice acting role. Kind of cool. You get an actual professional wrestler in a show that's about wrestling. Makes a lot of sense. And these muscle guys. And you also, you know, this is kind of a continuing trend where, you know, we've seen Alexa Bliss get into voice acting, and Minoru Suzuki was in an episode of One Piece. So it feels like there's maybe some sort of natural crossover between the wrestling world and the anime world.
Yeah, this isn't really surprising at all. I imagine, and I'd have to go back and look at it for sure. I'm sure that we've had similar things happen with like the Tiger Mask anime over the years.
Yeah.
One of the more recent seasons had like Tetsuya Naito in it and other New Japan figures. So I'm not really surprised, but yeah, it seems like WWE in general is a lot more open, and if not actually actively seeking opportunities for their talent outside of just wrestling. I mean, we saw Tony D'Angelo on a CW show a few weeks back. I think anytime you can get your it works both ways. Anytime you can get your wrestlers in other medium doing television shows, doing anime, doing movies, that's awesome. And as we've seen, they've not been shy about bringing in celebrities, even if it's just to show them on screen that they're there, or, you know, whether you're a fan of it or not. Travis Scott being in the ring during the Rock Cena Rhodes issue. I think anytime you can cross over and reach out to other audiences, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing. There probably is some degree of WWE going out and trying to secure these opportunities, but I think there's also maybe equal, if not more parts, WWE just not saying no, because I feel like in the Vince era, if Vince didn't get it, it just didn't happen. And obviously, if there were big opportunities that were clearly, obviously, they make a lot of sense from a crossover standpoint, I think Vince would have probably been on board with it. But in this era, it's, you know, getting your people out everywhere you can. And if, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura gets an offer to be in this show, they're not going to say no to it. Like, sure, absolutely. And then, of course, you know, you promote it everywhere, and, you know, WWE comes out, you know, and probably will post about it at some point as well. Like, you know, it just makes a ton of sense. And that's kind of that new mindset that TKO has with their athletes. And, you know, I think that's good. And, you know, a lot of pro wrestling guys are anime guys. You know, Austin Creed obviously has talked a ton about anime. Angelo Dawkins might be the biggest One Piece fan out there. He's always tweeting about One Piece.
It certainly permeated other realms, whether it's wrestling, sports, entertainment. Like, it's not weird for people to be into anime at this point.
Yeah. So I, you know, makes a ton of sense. Really cool for Shinsuke to get this opportunity. And, you know, we'll see if at least any additional opportunities.
It's kind of funny because I've watched the episodes of Sakamoto Days that Alexa Bliss is in and didn't even realize she was in it. Huh. So it didn't even really stand out that it was her necessarily. I wasn't thinking about it at the time, but it at least didn't stand out for being a bad performance. Like, you know, maybe someone in Solo Leveling did a few weeks ago.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's really what you want out of a guest appearance, is that it doesn't stand out, that it just sounds like another voice actor or actress just doing their job. Yeah. And in that case, that tells you she probably did a pretty good job, which is not too terribly surprising, but just cool story. And if you're into that show, and I know our buddy Chris is into that show, I'm sure he will be checking those episodes out when they air. One other final news story, and it is a little bit of kind of rumors at this point, but, you know, we talked about on this podcast that Game Informer, longtime magazine, went all the way back to 1991, was shut down back in 2024. A lot of people really sad about it because they kind of felt like this was something that got them through their childhood and got them in, you know, even more into video games. But there's some social media posts that kind of lead you to believe that maybe there's some sort of return on the horizon for Game Informer. Some of the former staff of the publication have been sharing these posts. I think there was at least a little fear at first that it was some sort of NFT or crypto, because anytime something like this happens nowadays, that's unfortunately the first thing your mind goes to, is that somebody has camped on that name and bought it for the cheap and now is turning it into some sort of spam token. But it doesn't appear that that's the case. It does appear that there's at least some smoke, you know, where you see, or there's some fire to the smoke. You've kind of looked in a little bit farther than I have at this point. Kind of your thoughts on, you know, maybe this could be coming back, what this could look like, and kind of some other things kind of tangent to this.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. It's reminiscent in ways to the failed attempt to bring back G4.
Yeah.
Where there was kind of that social media like teaser. In this case on X, they posted what was basically just a video showing the state of their website with the announcement that they were going away. And then March 25th, something's going to happen on March 25th. We don't know what yet. I'm trying to think of what this could be. My first assumption is that this doesn't mean a return to print magazines.
Yeah.
Because that's a losing battle in 2025, I believe.
It is.
I don't see that being viable. I'm curious, though, because last I checked, GameStop owned Game Informer, so I don't really know how all that works, because I think that was part of when they acquired Funko Land, maybe they got Game Informer, but so I don't know what's up with that, because you don't hear GameStop talking about this,
right.
So I don't know if maybe they sold it off and I didn't realize it, who knows. I could see maybe they could run it more as like an online only thing where the overhead isn't nearly as great.
Yeah.
That's a possibility to try to get it up and running again. The thing that intrigues me the most, though, is, you know, a few months back on Facebook, I was getting a lot of ads for Electronic Gaming Monthly, which is to me an even more beloved gaming magazine from my childhood. They were crowdsourcing this hardbound commemorative compendium that spanned, you know, their entire life. And, the wild thing about that is I checked out the Kickstarter last night, which it's since ended, but you can still back them as like a late backer and get the rewards. Their initial goal was $35,000 to make this big hardbound book to send to people. And they've actually raised 4,000% of that. currently, they are sitting at $1.5 million raised. So you have to wonder if the Game Informer people or GameStop, whoever is calling the shots here, they don't see something like that. And they say, you know, Game Informer has been around since 1991. Its longevity and what it's covered throughout those years, that has value. And clearly, when you look at what EGM was able to pull in, why can't we attempt to do something similar? So I got to wonder if this isn't going to be something like that, where instead of just trying, hey, we're back as a magazine, we're coming out every month, it's instead going to be, hey, let's celebrate our history. We're going to give you this really cool collector's item that maybe could raise over $1 million.
And that would be really awesome. Like, I don't think anybody would be mad about that. I think, you know, sometimes when these brand names go away, it's a little surprising, just because there is still some value in the name if it hasn't been dragged through the mud before it went away, which I don't think Game Informer really had. So why would you not, if you were starting a gaming website, look into maybe buying the domain, buying the name of it? Because, I mean, what's GameStop going to do with it, unless they're going to do, as you said, some sort of compendium that you'll be able to pick up? But otherwise, it's just sitting out there. Why would you not at least attempt to go after it and maybe bring some of the staff back? But
and really, it would even make sense from GameStop's point of view, because where GameStop is now in 2025, they're going to have to keep leaning harder and harder into the retro side of things, because by the time we get knee deep into the next generation of consoles, how many of them are even, outside of Nintendo, going to have physical media that can be sold at a storefront? I mean, yeah, they could still sell digital assets that you could then take home and redeem, but how many people are doing that when you could just do that from the console itself?
Right. If you're going to play a digital version, then that means you already have a good enough internet connection to just buy it at home. You don't need to go out and get it otherwise. So yeah, it's very interesting. And I think this is something that I think we're going to see more of in the media space in general, not just the gaming media, that you're going to see maybe some of these old brand names that have gone away. You hope that they get bought by people that want to create some sort of tribute to them, and the fact that they're going to do news or whatever, maybe, and not people who are looking to scam people. But there'll be some of that as well, especially as companies go under and these properties go to liquidation and, you know, auction and things like that. Then really anybody could buy it and do whatever you want with it at that point. But it'll be interesting to see. Our March 25th, like Mike said, is kind of when this is supposed to happen. So by the time we do our next news podcast, which I believe will be next Wednesday, this Wednesday, I guess, if you want to look at it that way, Maybe we'll have a better idea of exactly what this is going to be. But before we get to the end, just a quick reminder, we'll be back with you on Sunday for the Hard Rock Empire. It's music of March the 7th coming up this week. Looking forward to that, 7 o'clock Eastern time. No news podcast on Monday. I'm starting a new job. I don't know what that's going to look like for my schedule yet. So the plan is to be back on Wednesday, 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. If that changes, we'll post it on social media and let you know. With that said, are you ready to wrap this up with the Empire Express?
Do it.
All right, TNA World Champion and viral sensation Joe Hendry is one of the few non-WWE superstars who will be at WWE World signing autographs during WrestleMania weekend. It should be noted that Jey Uso needs a tag team partner for Monday's Raw in Glasgow, Scotland. Seems like Hendry would make a lot of sense there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's obvious, right? And honestly, this is kind of just another shot at people who initially crapped on the WWE TNA partnership, thinking it was just going to be people moving back and forth between NXT and TNA Impact. Clearly, they don't mind bringing TNA's champion, and we've seen it before on television, and make them look like $1 million. I just, such a crazy time to be a wrestling fan.
Yep.
WWE wrestler and Chicago Bears superfan Seth Rollins will guest host NFL Network's Good Morning Football from March 24th to 26th with co-host Kyle Brandt. This is another crossover that makes a lot of sense, right?
He's even talked about getting into like NFL broadcasting to some degree when his career is over, and he's kind of set like a hard stop date of 45 years old for his career, and I think he's already kind of looking ahead, the visionary, the architect, looking ahead at his post-retirement career, and this could definitely be an avenue to get into that. If you're looking at a new way to get healthy and maybe help your guitar shredding skills at the same time, you can check out Yngwie Malmsteen's new line of multivitamin supplements, Yngwie Malmsteen's Force. Interested in giving these a shot?
It's interesting that it's Force and not like Rising Force. I don't know if maybe that's going to be the male enhancement version later down the road. I'm not sure. I'm not a dietitian or nutritionist, but comparing it to like the typical GNC Mega Men Sport Multi, the daily value percentages are lower, but it does have iron in it, which a lot of vitamins don't. So that could be a thing. You know, in a day where bands are all shilling their wine and liquor and beer and weed products, I think it's kind of wild. Nettie Trunk kind of mentioned it when they talked about it, that it's cool to have a musician potentially shilling something that's healthy for you.
Yeah.
Seattle Mariners have another Japanese related crossover this season. In addition to One Piece Night, which we talked about recently, the team announced Thursday that they will wear Nintendo and Switch 2 patches on their uniforms this season. Seems logical.
Yeah, they have a big Japanese fan base, obviously, because Ichiro, one of the all-time great players, really, of all time, made his name in Seattle when he came to the States. And I think that that fan base has carried over. So I honestly, a little surprised it hasn't happened sooner. I know the uniform patches are something that's fairly recent, but they'll wear Nintendo at home, Switch 2 on the road. It makes a ton of sense. And finally, after nearly 3 years, Digimon fans are getting a new anime series. The announcement broke this week of Digimon Beat Break, which included a trailer of the show and a launch date of October 25. It's amazing. Digimon just keeps on going, right?
Yeah, you know, over here, I feel like it was initially maybe unfairly viewed as a Pokemon clone, and people kind of looked down on it to some degree for that. But it's clearly had staying power and a loyal following. They recently showcased a new video game back at last month's Sony State of Play, which looked really cool. So keep going. Let's do it.
Yeah, really cool. For the Digimon fans out there, they're treating you well. They're giving you some more Digimon. So look forward to that coming up in October. But that is going to wrap things up for the Friday edition of the Nerdcast News Report. You are all set and ready for your weekend. A reminder, we will not be back on Monday. We'll be back on Wednesday. Still planning on 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. We'll let you know if that needs to change for any reason, but we'll continue to roll on with our three times a week news podcast. And then, of course, we'll be back on Sunday with the Hard Rock Empire, the music of March the 7th, coming up Sunday, 7 o'clock Eastern time. Big thanks to Stoveleg Media for their continued support of our podcast. Big thanks to our crew, including Mike here in the studio. And a big thanks to you for listening whenever and wherever. And a big thanks to all of our new followers, whether it's on Twitch or on YouTube. We appreciate you. Thank you for joining us. Tell a buddy, tell a friend, buy, sell, trade. Spread the word of the Nerdcast Empire to everyone you know. That is going to wrap things up for this week. We'll be back on Sunday with another edition of the Hard Rock Empire. And until then, don't forget to join the Empire, the Nerdcast Empire.